The founder of the LaSalle Network, the job expert we go to here, is Tom Gimbel. Tom, somebody said I'd like to know what Tom Gimbel thinks about that Cameo story. Cameo, in order to get a few dozen employees back from home into the office 4 days a week, is offering a $10,000 raise, plus catered lunch every day, plus on-site free gym membership and free parking. Your thoughts?
I think the lunch and the parking is in the gym is awesome. I think paying people an increased salary to come into the office is sending the wrong message, and I think it's a short-term trying to get excitement. It's definitely getting clicks and getting views, and people are talking about it, but I think long-term, from a company morale and corporate culture, I'm not sure it accomplishes much.
Why do you say that?
Well, what's it for? Is the money to do the job, or is it to come into the office? If it's to come into the office, is it because I have a long commute? So does somebody who's commuting from Wheaton get a, they're not getting as good a deal as somebody who lives in River North if their office is, say, in the Loop. So you have that situation. Then you have people who would have come in for free anyway, so now they're like, yeah, I'm getting free money, but somebody else is saying, that's about $820 a month pre-taxes, and that isn't even paying for my daycare, so it's not even enough. And you can never make all of the people happy, and so you're throwing money. What happens if somebody legitimately is allowed to move out of state? Do they have to give the $10,000 back? And how does that work? So it creates a lot of whispering. It creates reasons. So you're paying us to come back because you don't think we want to. And it sends that, it's almost like putting lipstick on a pig. If you think it's the right thing to do to have people come into the office, then lead and say it. Don't bribe them.
Well, I think that's they have the luxury of being able to afford it, too. I mean, the CEO of Cameo said that, all right, if we bring 26 people back at $10,000, it's an investment of $260,000. This is a company worth several hundred million dollars. It is also a reminder that there are some things companies could have done all along and only now are doing or have been doing since the pandemic, but they could have been doing things to make the employees happy a long time ago.
Well, I think, number one, what a company's worth and what their cash flow is are two very different things. You could have a company worth $1 billion. Doesn't mean that it has the cash flow. It just means that if somebody was going to buy it, they think that's what it's worth. So I think those are two very different things. Number two, it doesn't mean that Cameo is not a good company or the CEO isn't a good CEO. It just means he's making a decision, and I think that there are some negative impacts of it that aren't being talked about in the article and in the press release, and it's kind of a, hey, let's get everybody back so we'll pay you more money. Well, were the people not worth the money before? What is it supposed to be used for? Do they have to show that they're using it to commute? You know, I just think it creates this undercurrent of what it's for.
Well, only you would see a $10,000 raise to people as something devious. I mean, maybe it's, you know, it's $10,000. Take the money. Don't question the employee or even the motive of the employer.
If I'm the employee, I take it and run. I'm ecstatic about it. I'm just saying, from a bigger picture perspective of what happens in the long run, if somebody doesn't want to come into work, the $10,000 isn't going to stop them from looking for another job. It just isn't.
Yeah.
They're going to say, was I not worth that before? That's human nature. And so it's great. It's nice. It creates buzz.
I don't know. I got a raise once, and I didn't turn to the employer and say, really? Why didn't you give this to me last year? It's still me. I thought I was worth a lot last year and the year before that and the year before that. Over time, people get raises. Companies' fortunes change. People's talents improve, and circumstances change. I wouldn't.
So why does everybody get it then? If that's the case, then why does everybody get it in this situation, John?
I don't have an answer.
Everybody's not growing at the same pace.
Fair enough. Good question. Lots of text messages about this. Can I just pummel you a little bit more?
Please attack. I
don't mean to do that. And besides, whenever we do this, everybody texts after the show and they go, "Boy, is that Tom Gimbel right?" Talking to Tom Gimbel about the Cameo incentive for employees to come back to work from home into the office 4 days a week, $10,000 raise, plus catered lunch in, plus gym membership in, plus free parking. A couple of my listeners have said, and me members of the staff said, what that's really about is in the last 4 years, 5 years, people have had kids or they have kids and they've been working from home. Now, in order to come in, it's going to be a major expense for daycare. So this is not so much as a raise as it is just a way for people to afford coming back into the office. What's your reaction to that idea, Tom?
And people had the same expense that they did before. And if you had a real job and you had kids, you had to have daycare for them. I guess if they're in school, I guess you need it from 3 to 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock when you get home. But I mean, I think that people act like we didn't have all of these expenses before 2020. We all had to make do and live and do things. It's, you know, what about the people that went out of business who had the dry cleaners and the lunch sandwich shops near the office buildings and the people in the buildings that didn't stay open and the cleaning crews that didn't have jobs? Like, there's so many more people than just the white-collar folks that have a woe is me that life is changing a little bit.
Cameo is getting free advertising right now, John. See, it worked. 815 says, Tom is right on this one, John. Somebody else said, if the company can afford this, they should reward all employees, not just the ones who want to work in the office. And is the issue of returning to the office a testimony to the immaturity of the current workforce? Your reaction to any of those, Tom?
Well, I think that's the immature. I don't know exactly what the texter meant, but my perception of that was the immaturity of the workforce. Like, you know, you're coming in is like going into, you know, a Siberian prison and getting your skin ripped off. I mean, you're going into a place of business that work where they pay you to do the job. And as I said before the break, if somebody's going to quit now, they're going to quit in 6 months, or if they really don't want to come in, there's some amount of money that'll solve the problem, but I don't think it's $10,000.
Let me just read a couple more texts to you. Thank you, John. I was waiting for Tom to chime in on this. Is Tom mad that people will be asking business owners for $10,000? I'll let you answer that.
No, I don't think that. I think employees should ask for as much as their work and their output deserves. I absolutely think that. And the better you are at your job and the more you accomplish, the more you're worth. And the key is to know what your worth is inside the company or outside the company. And the company has to make a decision of what they're willing to pay. That's the beautiful thing about business, is that is what happens really every day, every week, every month, every year, is that the employee has to have confidence in their skills and how much output they do, and then determine what they want to ask for. I think it's great.
If a company can afford $10,000, says 224, to pay workers to come back to the work, why criticize? Are you criticizing the $10,000 raise for the employees at Cameo?
No. My comments are saying, is bribing employees to come into the office the right leadership strategy? Not that it's a bad thing for the employee or for everybody should do what they think is right. I've said this to you for years now, even remote work. If that's what you think is right, I just happen to disagree with it. And I think when you bribe people for behavior, that's not an incentivization. It's a bribe. And I think incentivizing people for output and work and what they do, but you know, the phrase I used is it's almost like they're saying, coming into the office is so bad, we're going to pay you $10,000 to come in.
Okay.
It's not bad. It's a good thing.
Yeah. All right. But staying at, but working from home is a good thing for a lot of people too. And this is maybe a different conversation, but it's also one you and I have had many times. This is something that businesses could have done before the pandemic, and they didn't, and they missed an opportunity. They could have made people happier. They could have accommodated people's lifestyles more. They could have even maybe paid them less if they had just realized that working from home was an option, and they didn't get it then. They didn't have to get it then. And I'm just wondering if they realize now the lesson that the pandemic has kind of taught us. Not everybody has to go back into the office. It's okay for some people to be at home.
I believe, my standard on this, John, is everybody's got to make a decision. And there's a lot of CEOs that say, let's work remote for forever. And that's great. And there's other ones that believe they should come home. And there's also motives that we don't know. Maybe they do own the building that they're in and they want to maximize that. I have no idea. My belief is that young people, I mean, There's so many issues at bay here, John, and I think you have young people who have social anxiety because they've never interviewed for a job in person. You have older people that are taking advantage of the system and not working on Fridays. You have people that aren't teaching one another and aren't giving of themselves back to the bigger community within the organization because they don't want to come into the office. You have, you know, there's so much that goes into this beyond, I'm more productive as an individual at home. Well, great. You know what? I love eating pizza and sitting on my couch all day. That doesn't make it healthy for me.
Yeah, I know.
Sometimes we have to think of the bigger picture.
Well, I know, but Tom, that goes both ways, right? All along, companies could have been more appreciative of the burden work is. It always has been, and that's been the trade. But what could we do as companies to make it better for our employees? And the paycheck was always the answer. And now the world has turned a little bit. And I think it's okay for companies to take that as well.
I'm not disputing that aspect of it. Are there more that companies can do? But I also ran a company for 25 years and placed people at all different sizes companies, startups and Fortune 1000. I'll tell you something else I heard a lot of. You get people who didn't have kids asking why parents, people who had kids, got special treatment. It's not just the company and the individual employee. There's also peer issues that exist in the company. Why does this person get that and I don't? And it's not just on parents. It's so many things that go on. And at the end of the day, work truly is, it tends to be a meritocracy. And if you do good work, you're always going to get special privileges. It's when everybody thinks everyone's entitled to everything. And that's just not how business works. And there's going to be some companies that'll do it. But doing something across the board, it's just a hard road to toe, I think.
I'm just going to read a couple more comments. I'll let you get the last word in here. Tom just hit it out of the park. I love these segments with him. I wish more companies said somebody else would offer this type of incentive to go back to the office. Mine, unfortunately, does not. Another one says, my son works from home and his wife does 2 days a week. They still have daycare. It's just easier for pickup and they spend the time that they would spend commuting working, so they are done sooner. I'm so tired of the you owe me attitude these days. Another one says, just today, talking to a work-at-home sales lady that had the background TV on so loud you could hardly hear her talking. And one more, I think work from home is here to stay, but I do agree that this $10,000 deal is bad leadership. Last word from you, Mr. Gimble.
Nobody's good or bad. We all make decisions and we have to live with the consequences, whether you're a leader or you're an employee. And if you think you can get a better deal someplace else, God bless you. And as a leader, you make decisions and you have to live with the consequences. I didn't bribe my kids to get good grades, and I don't need to pay people more for them to come into an office. It's where the job is done.
That's Tom Gimble. He is the job expert and the founder of the LaSalle Network. Nice to talk to you as always, Tom. Thanks.
Absolutely, John. Stay warm.
Just communicating with our friend Tom Gimble. John, with 40 years of HR experience, Tom is absolutely right. We were talking about the $10,000 raise. Cameo is offering employees to come back into the office. Tom's not a big fan. I very much appreciate your willingness to challenge Tom weekly, says somebody to me. I so agree with Tom, says another listener. We have a pampered workforce. 262 said, my employer allows me to work remotely and has since 2019. I am uniquely qualified for my job. I work hard. I work long hours at home. I don't miss the commute, and I love my job and my employer for allowing me to do this. Three more. John, I work for a large healthcare company for 25 years. The last 18 remotely, I've been much more productive at home. 630, it's time everyone does the job they're paid for. And finally, another listener said, this is exactly what's wrong with corporate America. We are going to go back to full-time office work, no matter how hard they try. Speaking of work, Philip Weiss joins us, the president of Cyfarth at Work. Philip is a regular guest on WGN, sometimes follows Tom Gimble. Do you want to sound off on that at all before we roll on to some other topics with you, Philip?
Yeah, well, what's remarkable about that debate, John, is clearly we haven't reached a sense of equilibrium on how the business community, employees, and prognosticators feel about remote versus in-person work. And that's just because we're dealing with what clearly still remains a new reality 3 or 4 years on. But a lot of people I talk to, their view is, at least that's from the top down, that this still needs to shake out a couple more years. We need to find a balance in many workplaces. Remote work is here to stay, but the percentage, the final percentage for many companies, has yet to be determined.
I think the word you used, equilibrium, is so appropriate because Tom's always been saying the one thing. I'm playing the devil's advocate, arguing on the other side, and I don't think either of us are hearing the other. And at some point, you know, there will be an equilibrium point. Whatever the world will be, but we're still trying to figure that out, aren't we, Philip?
Yeah, absolutely. And what's really interesting about your insight there is I think many people at different levels in organizations were shocked at the fact that remote work worked at all, had any meaningful level of effectiveness. But that was not true for every organization and for every employee. So it's almost like a pendulum that's been swinging back and forth somewhat erratically at times, but it will find that new center spot for many new and existing companies.
And this has been a stressful time for managers, right?
Yeah, you know, it's such a great segue. We've been looking at some recent polls, our own and that of large polling companies of executives regarding how they feel about the work environment and their company's chances at increased growth this year. And what's really remarkable is there's a high level of angst, the equivalent of executives reaching for the antacids, because over 70% in recent polls of top executives are saying they're more anxious now in January, February of 2025 than they were a year ago. And that is also surprising, John. One reason it's surprising is because with a Republican administration in office, by and large, business feels they will be supported. Their goals will align with those of the people in D.C. But there's been so much instability, and frankly, remote work is just one facet of that. Tariffs risks is another one. The supply chain disruptions that, to your point, also have not reset in a way that serves consumers or producers. All of that and more is combining to create this real heartburn at the top levels of corporations. So as opposed to feeling like, hey, we're heading into a year of opportunity, many leaders are saying this feels like a year of ongoing and maybe even increased risk. That's the upshot of these surveys, John.
But are those managers getting pressure that this is a year of opportunity, that the expectations are higher for them right now?
Yeah, that's almost word for word what we've heard from a lot of mid-level managers. They're telling us the people at the top expect growth this year, but that is not does not translate into the reality. And if you talk to executives behind closed doors, meaning when they're not in front of their managers, they kind of whistle a different tune. And what they're telling us is with the sort of the potential gutting of a number of federal agencies, with the supply chain issues, even issues related to severe weather, are really a boondoggle and are a haunting factor for so many top leaders. One of the surveys indicated that 90% of executives report that severe weather has affected either their business or their vendors and suppliers' business in a way that was meaningfully dangerous to them. So that's just another issue that you throw in this pot, this maelstrom of risk. And what's really interesting is what consumers see, you know, no eggs on the shelves. In many markets, deodorant is hard to find, all because of supply chain issues and related factors. That's as much a strain on the companies producing the products as it is on the consumer. So there's a lot to worry about, even though managers, to your point, feel that the expectations are still high.
And you also, I think this survey talked about the drag this is on the economy then. If there's uncertainty or lingering supply chain issues, then companies are hesitant to upgrade equipment or order new to capitalize, right?
Yeah, and that's another drain or strain on this ability to keep growing, opening new markets, creating more efficiencies. A lot of executives just feel it's a risky time to buy equipment, to expand, to upgrade. They want to keep capital because they fear they may need it because of some disruption, whether it's weather-related or supply chain-related or labor shortage-related. So what's really interesting is a lot of companies are holding back on making improvements and growth investments that they need. At the same time, a lot of their attention is being spent on things like looking for new suppliers. Because if you look up to Canada, they are not dealing with an egg shortage, which is kind of an eye-opener, because they have a lot of very small individual egg suppliers that could protect their stock of chickens, their stock of poultry, their egg production apparatus. In the U.S., we're all very much tied together with only a few large suppliers. So more suppliers, more flexibility, more access to components for manufacturing. That's a big focus, as opposed to upgrading equipment. So it's kind of a very interesting time for the market because executives have to make some tough decisions, and those decisions may be surprising at times.
Well, maybe it's interesting, to use your word, a time for businesses, but would you rather be in 2020 or 2021? I mean, every year presents challenges. Is anybody taking a step back and saying, okay, those are the unique challenges of 2025, but that does not cancel the obligation or even the need to grow and prosper? I mean, when was it perfect? So let's go. Stop your whining. Let's go to work.
Yeah, well, I love that. You know, just like we're telling employees, don't whine, do the job, invest in your own work ethic. Executives perhaps need to look in the mirror and say, it's not about your own angst. It's about what you can do to kind of re-steer the ship. And you make a great point about COVID, or as a comparison, the mortgage-backed securities debacle or the dot-com debacle. There's many times for the banking crisis where companies were on the verge in many cases, and they're not on the verge of disaster now. Relative to COVID and the height of the lockdowns, we're in a great place. I think this goes to your first question, which is there's been an expectation that things will stabilize. That equilibrium we talked about in remote work was expected to take hold in terms of corporate decision-making and growth. It hasn't just yet, but perhaps it's a longer view that's necessary. And I think you're right. I think we're going to take that back to some of our clients and say, you know, John Williams has some prescient view for you, which is look forward and make good decisions. Don't look in the mirror and fill yourself with ennui and frustration.
Yeah, I wouldn't quote me to anybody. 70% of them surveyed and interviewed report being more stressed about the year ahead than at the beginning of 2024. Interesting survey. Philip Weiss joining us once again, the president of SeyFarth at Work, SeyFarth at Work.com. Nice to talk to you, Philip.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, John.
It's time for more business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new survey shows optimism among Chicago corporate leaders who have plans to boost hiring and increase office space in 2025. A survey conducted by KPMG, reported by Crane, shows 84% of business leaders expect an increase in hiring this year. 71% plan to increase office size. The report says leaders view Chicago as a market with a robust talent base where plenty of space is available for expansion. The downtown office market has yet to recover from COVID and the work-from-home era, so if this survey holds true, it would be good news for the city. Another Foxtrot location is reopening. The store at Milwaukee and Damon in Wicker Park is slated to open Wednesday. It'll be the sixth Foxtrot location to reopen in Chicago since the chain was resurrected after bankruptcy. Foxtrot closed 33 locations across the country right before the bankruptcy filing. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now, the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And if you are a kitchen inventor and you want to move it out of the kitchen and into online and brick-and-mortar stores, a Chicago woman who has done that will share some tips. After, I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. If necessity is the mother of invention, then Erica Beth Levin is a mother of necessity. After her second baby, she decided there had to be a better way to make healthier baby food, so she turned her Lincoln Park kitchen into a test kitchen and created a brand of baby food called Global.
Now it's been 3 years, so 2 years of research and development, fundraising, finding a manufacturer, et cetera, and 1 year now of selling.
And
we expanded to about 500 stores across the country.
And
we actually displaced the largest baby food brand out there at a chain in the Midwest called Fresh Thyme.
So if you're trying to do what Erica did, here are some tips on getting from the kitchen to CEO.
And, you know, replace the word kitchen with couch, living room, car, but basically start with a problem you're passionate about solving.
Then
research the market, you know, to confirm that there's demand.
Or put another way,
make sure that there's people out there that will actually pay money for it.
Then
start small. So create prototypes or samples. We did our first sales at street festivals to refine the product so that it was ready for a manufacturing facility.
And
you don't have to wait for things to be 100% before starting. You know, get something out there.
And one of the most important things to move from the kitchen to CEO,
make sure you don't run out of cash, right? Because the absolute worst thing would be you're 6, 8, 9 months in, you quit your job, and you run out of cash.
Erica Beth Levin, who went from Lincoln Park mom with a picky eater to CEO of Global Baby Food Company.
We are available on Amazon. We're available on Thrive Market, which ships nationally. And then we're available on our website, global.com.
And here's another Chicagoan who has gone from kitchen to CEO.
The advice I always give to people is it doesn't matter how old you are, just go for it.
More from her tomorrow. On the food calendar, it's National Crab Stuffed Flounder Day and National Drink Wine Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Lots of folks clicking in to the Wintrust Business Lunch today, texting away now about what Philip Weiss was telling us about, the stress that managers are feeling because maybe expectations are higher, but it's a whole new level of complications for managers. 312, I don't feel sorry for executives who are stressed. Am I wrong? 847, I do think that if the boss is stressed, it makes it harder for everyone. 630, my husband is the CEO of his company, and he is so stressed out with everything. He's probably going to resign and go back to something with fewer responsibilities. Another listener said, if things were more stable with more seasoned leadership, companies would feel more confident in the future. With Trump and Elon being so unpredictable and laying off half of America, I think it scares the CEOs. 630, corporations can't make money if consumers can no longer afford to buy the products. John, my suggestion is if people want to write the rules on how and where they work, they need to start their own company. That was Tom's line. This reminds me of the saying, the inmates are running the asylum. And one more, I'm so glad I'm retired. I don't have to deal with all of this remote work nonsense. Folks are still working, though, and Forbes has the list of the best large and medium-sized companies in America. They surveyed 701 big companies and 498 mid-sized companies. They asked a research firm, Statista, to survey 217,000 employees. And based on things like salary, advancement opportunities, work environment, training programs, the best big company in America is the University of Notre Dame. I guess that would be a fun place to work, right? It's Notre Dame. You're in. You're part of the club. You work at a college campus every day, and it's Notre Dame, number one. Number two, Trader Joe's. Number three, Houston Methodist. The medical center is number three. Navy, what was that number four, Pete? It was a Navy Financial. I believe it was a credit union. Oh, yeah, NVIDIA was number four, and Navy Credit Union, I think, was number five. And Google is number six. I wonder if, I'm sure NVIDIA is still a good place to work, but I do think there was a shot across their bow in the last few weeks, and I wonder how work is going to change at that place. Those are the big ones. In Illinois, the best-rated large employer with 51,000 employees is Hyatt Hotels. Of 701 large companies, they came in at number 62. And that's as good as it gets here. Caterpillar's 113, Grainger 139, Northwestern Medicine 159 out of 701, Ace Hardware 338, Motorola 339, Kraft Heinz is 691 out of 701. Don't know what's going on at Kraft Heinz, but the employees don't like it as much there. The mid-size companies, number 7, based in Chicago, 3,400 employees, Morningstar. Harper College is 34. Southern Illinois Healthcare is 41. Wintrust is in the middle of the pack, 252 out of 498, almost exactly in the middle. How about that?